Good day and welcome to the Rural Health Clinic's Technical Assistance National Teleconference Series, becoming a patient-centered medical home conference call. During today's conference, you will have the opportunity to ask questions by pressing star 1. Please be aware that you will be prompted to record your first and last name at that time, along with your state location, and that the recording will be played into the conference prior to your line being open to ask your question. Also, as a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. And now at this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Bill Zinnerfrock. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. And I want to welcome everyone to today's RHC teleconference call on becoming a patient-centered medical home. This is the second in a two-part series on this topic. Some of you may recall a few months ago we had a presentation on the whole concept of becoming a patient-centered home, medical home. Today, we're pleased to have with us Marge Young, from the Executive Director of the Pine Medical Group, and she's joined by Inez Hawes, who's a Clinical Director at the Pine Medical Group, a rural health clinic in Fremont, Michigan, that has become certified as a patient-centered medical home. Ms. Young and Ms. Hawes will talk about the process the clinic went through to become a patient-centered medical home and the value for the clinic and the clinic's patients in obtaining this designation. We anticipate that more and more health plans, including government programs, will be looking for clinics to have certification as a PCMH in the future, and all RHCs should investigate the opportunity to become certified as a PCMH. Today's presentation is a wonderful opportunity to learn from an RHC colleague how her clinic was able to obtain this certification. The format for today's program will consist of approximately 45 minutes for the presentation, with remaining time allotted for your questions. As a reminder, this series is sponsored by the Health Resources and Services Administration's Federal Office of Rural Health Policy in conjunction with the National Association of Rural Health Clinics. The purpose of the Rural Health Clinic Technical Assistance Series is to provide RHC staff with valuable technical assistance and RHC-specific information. Today's call is the 44th in the series, which began in late 2004. During that time, nearly 12,000 individuals have participated on the bi-monthly national teleconferences. As you know, there is no charge to participate in this series, and we encourage you to refer others who might benefit from the information to sign up to receive announcements regarding dates, topics, and speaker presentations. You can get that information by going to www.rhsa.gov/rural-health-confcall-INDEX.html. During the Q&A period today, we do ask that you provide us with your name and state location before asking your question. If in the future you have suggestions for topics or questions for a speaker, you can send them to info@narhc.org. and put RHCTA question in the subject line, and we will make every effort to post questions and answers as part of the series. At this point, I'd like to thank both Marge and Inez for giving their time today to be with us to talk about patient-centered medical homes and how you, the value of becoming one. Marge and Inez, time is all yours.
Thank you, Bill. First of all, I want to tell you a little bit about Pine Medical, just so you'll understand why we took this on from the get-go. And what happened at Pine Medical, we're a multi-specialty group with two offices, about 119 employees, including physicians, 13 family practice, two nurse practitioners, three general surgeons, two pediatricians, an ortho surgeon, and an ortho PA. Our second office also has an urgent care. So in the very beginning, we were approached by Priority Health, an insurance company in Michigan, who asked us if we were interested in becoming a medical home. And we were circumspect, certainly, but we thought that the financial incentives were worth it, and we would proceed. We wanted better medical care for our patients, of course. but also to be viable financially. And our medical director was our champion, and he was very much in the forefront of going forward. And I'll tell you, if you don't have a strong medical director, I do not think you could do this program, because you've got to have that backing. The first thing we did, we found from Priority Health that we could go on to a website called TransferMed, and we went on the TransferMed website and it had a test that we could take for all the domains in the medical home, and Inez will speak to that in just a second. But what we did, we began, first the medical director took the test from the professional point of view, and then Inez and I each took it to see if our practice actually had the capabilities to become a medical home. Because if you're starting from zero, this would be pretty tough. And we thought if we could start perhaps at 50% of the capabilities, like having an EMR or having some programming that included the hospital, something like that, we might be able to move forward. And the three of us took the test and came out with a favorable score and thought at that point, okay, let's investigate this and see if we can move forward with this. Inez?
What we did then was we took the information in all the domains in the patient-centered medical home outline, and I worked with another RN, and we actually split up all those domains and thought of each task that would have to be accomplished in order to meet the criteria. We put in all the tasks that we already do, and we also added new ones that we thought we should do. And then, of course, with the plan, we did this like on a storyboard. So we had sheet wallpapering one whole office with that whole plan on it. But it also included who was going to do it and how we're going to do it and what time frame we would do it. So we kind of had a starting point, because if you look at that whole program and don't take it apart, you're just going to be overwhelmed. It's very big. And even though we have always done a lot of pieces of it, things are documented, how we're recording it, how it's being reported to the insurance companies, et cetera, we had to take a look at all of that over again and make some changes.
And because we're an independent RHC, so you know what that means, we're out there on our own. The first thing we did, we talked to the hospital about doing a diabetic program with us, because we knew that, you know, that was the easiest thing to grab onto and see what we could do. So we talked to the hospital. I had been a hospital administrator for 8 years, so I kind of knew my way around, and I knew that one of the things that happens in a hospital is it's very difficult to get patients to the diabetic educator. So here was the low-hanging fruit, and we talked to the nursing director. We put together a program where we would schedule the diabetic patient in our office with our physician, and we would pick a day when the diabetic educator could be on site. We rented them a room because it's stark, and we walked the patient with the patient's agreement from the doctor's exam room to the diabetic educator. And the first day, we had 8 patients, and seven of those patients signed on with the program. And to this day, now that was 4 years ago, to this day we still have that program in both offices, and it's been a very good thing. Do you want to add anything to that, Inez?
It's just that the hospital has kept track of the HbA1c levels of these patients that are involved in the program, and their lab has gone down one whole percentage point. So we feel that was enough incentive to keep us going. It's good patient care, and the patients really like it because it's individualized.
Yeah, and their program increased by 200%. It was quite unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it's just been very good. Our patients feel cared about. They keep saying those things that they feel like they're being supported. I keep hearing that from our patients. One of the ways we made this easier was to interface. We have an independent lab, Quest Lab, was to interface the lab with our EMR. Now, understand, we first had an imaging system, which has since become ONC-certified and for meaningful use. So it's quite robust now, but it wasn't. And we were able to interface the lab, and then we pulled in a registry called WellCenter, and we were able to get the Quest Lab interfaced with WellCenter. And the registry was free. The interface was free. The lab couldn't hardly wait to do that for us because, of course, we'd use them more. And the registry, everything else we put in the registry, unfortunately, we had to do manually. But the registry did give us reports for diabetes and scorecards and showed us when we had gaps, and that was wonderful. And then, Inez, you want to talk about the surveys and how we work that?
For the diabetic patients, and that's the program that you'll probably want to start with if you haven't started it already. Like Mark said, that's easy to start. It's a big population, and it affects, you know, all those chronically ill people. So what we started to do with the diabetic manager is that we had her give the patients a survey after she got done talking with them, and we got that as feedback to see how they felt about their care. And when Mark says that they love that attention and that attention to their care, those surveys were just really, really positive, and that's where we have basis for that information.
And then the next thing we did, we started working on asthma, and we found out that a lot of our staff, including me, never understood where asthma became COPD. So one of our physicians did an in-service. Actually, we went on the road with this, and he did another one for the community, which was really very well received. But anyway, he became the champion of that program, and we did that nursing in-service, and the nurses loved that. It was wonderful. He taught them how to do teach-backs. Of course, a lot of them knew how to do that already. And then Inez can speak to her. She and the other RN meeting with the respiratory therapist.
We met with the respiratory therapist from the hospital because, again, we like to have that partnership. The hospital is right next door to us and very easy to access. And we can use them as a resource. And they also are available for care plan meetings, et cetera. If we need them, all we have to do is call. The nurses are doing a good job of teaching patients now about their medication, the long-term and the short-acting medications, which gets a little confusing. And we also are doing the spirometers and making sure that patients know how to use their inhalers, and that teaching element has really helped our asthma patients.
When we were going through this process, I'm sorry, we're on page or slide five. When we were going through this process, they have care management templates in the WellCenter registry, but these are certainly, you could put a template into your EMR, or you could also use something, you know, with paper. But the care management, when we talked about that, this other RN that Inez was working with, they were actually job sharing for a while, and then she started doing more and more care management. She had been out of work for a little bit of a family time and then came back and started really pushing this care management piece and working with the patients, doing action plans with them, outcomes. Sometimes it meant that a patient would come in and get weighed and talk to the care manager for a few minutes. But the fact of the matter is it was support, and it was teaching a patient about self-management. You want to add to that, Inez?
It's imperative that you have care managers involved with this PCMH when you're setting it up, because so much of the information and so much of the patient outcomes and things that you need to document, you're going to need that position in your office if you don't already have it. And then, like, we've just expanded it here because Marge has just hired more RNs who are the ones that are qualified to do this teaching and the action plans. And when we say action plans, these are all in conjunction with the way the physician wants to manage that patient. So that there's a lot of communication that takes place around that.
And as you're sitting there thinking, well, how are you hiring these people? As we go through these slides, I'm going to explain to you as well about the financial piece and how we got there. And I'm going to regress a little bit. In the very beginning, Priority Health did offer us a grant that we had to write the grant. And no dummies, Inez and I, we hired a grant writer because we hadn't a clue what we were doing. And we were able to get a grant that helped pay for some of the things we had to do in the beginning. And that grant was paid out to us over 3 years. And it did help us a little bit to get to where we are. And we knew we'd get enough to afford that first RN. So they told us it was the best grant they ever read. Well, yeah, that's because...
We gave them the information, but we didn't write the grant.
We didn't write the grant, yeah. So we could accept the accolades, but we did tell the truth. Anyway.
Inez, before you get off of that point, you mentioned 3 years. How long did it take you from the time that you first took your test, your online test, till you became a patient-centered, were certified as a patient-centered medical home?
Well, you know, Bill, this is Marge. We did that with the Blues, too.
Yeah.
So I'd say, yeah, I bet it was about a year.
About a year.
Before we got that first certification. And I think Priority Health came through first and then the Blues. And then we did the Inez and our other RN worked on the NCQA. So it was quite a little bit of time.
Yeah. And all this information overlaps itself. So whoever is planning it and so on has to remember that this is kind of all the same information, but like the Blues will have it stated one way and Priority Health, for the Michigan people anyway, will have it slightly different. NCQA is a little different yet, but it's all the same information, and it takes a little while to wade through all of that.
And the grant, if you're able to say, if you don't, that's fine, but how much was the grant, or if you don't want to give the amount, if that's whatever, but how was getting the grant critical to your ability to achieve PCMH status?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we were going to go anyway. What the grant really did, Bill, was it helped pay for the one RN, but it paid for some hardware that we needed the next year because we wanted to have the order module in our EMR so we could follow all our orders. Thank goodness we did that because now with this new Medicare transformation project, and we'll talk about that at the end, we absolutely have to have that. But
paid for some administrative work, too, like from our medical director and so on, because there are meetings and things that needed to be, you know, that were done. So.
Okay. All right.
But we would have done it.
Okay.
We, just so you know, in this practice, I came here in October 07, and Inez and the medical director had plucked a person out of medical records once they went to an EMR. And that person, all that person did was report quality indicators to our insurance companies. They had a very, very extensive quality, because of the extensive quality reporting, they were making great strides in quality money being paid back to the practice, which we have capitalized on over the last 3 years. So we'll talk about that at the end.
Okay.
On slide 6, when we're talking about the care plan visit, a lot of these, you know, we're always emphasizing the preventive behaviors, and we're finding, you know, the RNs tell me that a lot of these, and our LPNs, a lot of these people don't understand, you know, they hear you say if you don't do A, then B will happen, but they really don't believe it's going to happen to them. And I think when they keep coming in and they're talking with those care managers, they are, it does create that trust. And they are seeing that they need to get that HbA1c under 7. And it's been a very good thing. We had one lady in here, I think, 4 times before she understood how to really count her carbs, a diabetic. And she had been to the cooking classes with the hospital educator, and so that was a win, and she started to get better. But it was four times. I just gone to slide 7, and this is Marge again. I was at a meeting with the Michigan State Medical Society. They were talking about literacy with our patients, and a lot of patients read at lower than a fifth grade level, unfortunately, in Michigan, some at a third grade level. And people were having a hard time understanding when to take their medications. And I did see an AMA video talking about this. So a big network in Michigan put on a literacy conference, and I pulled together some nurses and the care manager. We went to that conference and really got our eyes opened on what that meant. It was free. It was free to go. It was a couple hours. But it was unbelievable what we learned there. And so people were understanding about the barriers. We've had to make signs for people's refrigerators because they don't understand T is Tuesday and TH is Thursday, and they weren't taking their meds right. And we had a color-coded chart for meds. So that was, that's been a win, a big win. And then the hospital discharges on this slide, we're beginning, well, we did follow some people in the hospital. You want to address that a little bit, Inez?
Yeah, every morning we get a list from the hospital of which patients, high medical patients, are there and their diagnosis. And so the care manager has started a long time ago already, kind of looking at those people. And if there is a diabetic, quite often she would check with the physician to see if there was a role for her to play before they left the hospital, or when they got home, they get a phone call. And we're doing that now pretty consistently. If they get a phone call, you know, did you make your follow-up appointment? Is everything going okay? Do you have any questions? That kind of thing. So that has really, all it does is build a relationship with these patients that they trust you enough to call you when they're having problems, and we can help with their care. So that's quite effective.
Yeah, it's been nice. We can make sure we get them into the office when we need to, and, you know, there's a whole transition there. And slide 8, the lunch and learns, I mentioned that before with one of our physicians who did a little outreach in the community, which we will continue with different topics. We did do some interviews on the radio, which actually was free, and our physicians could be on that radio, and, you know, we had a list of questions they were asking. We also ran a DVD on that and bought a flat screen and put it in our waiting room and played them and used that for a marketing tool also. And then the biggie came, the NCQA Level 3. So here we are working with Priority Health for the medical home. We're also working with the Blues. And then Priority Health says, well, you can make X amount of dollars if you become NCQA certified. So I'll let Inez tell you a little bit about that.
We didn't realize when we agreed to do this how much work that was going to be. And we laugh about it because we kind of went into it blindly. We went to one conference. Marge and I went to one conference and thought, oh, we can do this. Well, that's a process. That program is quite detailed, but what it really did was it made us examine every single process in this office, from how orders are taken, how to do follow-up with the patient. I mean, everything in between, you know, how the lab works, how we do callbacks on appointments, how do we let people know that we have openings for appointments. It covers a wide range of things, and two of us, like we said before, have worked on this, and we ended up getting the level 3, which was the highest level. It took us 2 tries to get there. But what a learning experience. And I think it was really has really impacted the processes in the office, and it's also, because of that, has impacted patient care. And we feel pretty good about that. That was a biggie. Now, I would suggest, if you're Michigan people, Priority Health has a nurse consultant that will help you a lot with this, and probably the Blues do too, although I did not work with them because we were doing this with Priority Health. But her name is Kathy Johnson, and she was excellent at saying, you know, have you thought of this and have you thought of that? So, you know, when you get bogged down in some of this, you might want to work with a consultant.
And then the next bullet point talks about office information. You know, we just made sure we had a lot of educational things available. When we got this level 3 and when we got some quality awards, which is mentioned here, we had pictures taken of staff. We hung them in our offices, put our awards up, to be honest with you, we were such good reporters of what we were doing. You know, I'm sure the majority of physicians are wonderful, but if you don't tell somebody what you're doing, they can't give you a quality award. So we were experts in reporting, but the truth of the matter is we do have very, very good outcomes. And I think they've gotten better since we've done all these things. And so that's been a very good thing. So the office information with educational handouts like I talked about, and then our website. You know, the first quote was $7,000, and after I, you know, caught my breath, I found somebody for $200, got us a website going, and then I sent an administrative assistant to a class, and she learned how to put that all together, and we have streaming, we have a link to bill pay with MedFusion, and it's very inexpensive. The way we did it, but we're just kind of refused to
information.
Yeah, and we have on that website, we have our PCMH information. If you want to go on pinemed.com, you can see that. All our doctors and bios on them. It's quite lovely, actually. And then the financial piece, I'll address that toward the end. The strategy and the evals. Inez and I, we have had a strategic planning meeting, and being a hospital person in the middle of my career, I knew that I wanted those evals to reflect the strategy of the organization. So we went back through those, and Inez redid the nursing, and we gave them the competencies that we knew we needed to hit the pieces of the NCQE in the PCMH domains so we could be right on target. And oddly enough, we had 2 billers go to a seminar, mm-hmm. and we got a call the next day from the seminar people, and they said, the only people in the room that knew what a medical home was. So we're pretty happy about that. So obviously we got our point across because we hammered it, and we still... Every meeting we have in this office, that is one of the agenda items, PCMH. You have to continue with it, or you'll lose track of it. And then slide 9, urgent care. This was an experience. Go ahead. You want to talk about that, Inez?
I think our urgent care started about 2.5 years ago, and Marge... And the board decided that would be a good thing for us to do in our satellite office. And it's been wonderful. We are seeing patients that we would not see otherwise. It's open every day, Monday through Friday. A little bit more during the summer hours because Newaygo, Michigan, where our office is a resort area. So we get all the people that are at the camping there. It's really opened up access for patients in the area. It actually is an extension of our office, and can also take patients that can't get in during the day, or for some reason or another a problem happens, you know, in the evening, they can go to the urgent care. We did write a whole different set of policies and procedures for urgent care because it's not the same as your regular office. So if that's in the planning, you know, really look to see what urgent care is, what types of patients you're going to be taking care of, and make your a little separate policy manual for that. And that has worked out very well for us.
And Inez and I had gone over and visited a dear friend of mine in another county who also had a urgent care office extension type one. And we looked at what they were doing. It was doing very well for them, also in a resort area. A lot of you would know her, Colleen Johnson. And she was fabulous to us, and we took our president of our group there and met with them. And then we were able to move forward. There was no urgent care in our county. So that's been a wonderful thing. And we have a group of PAs that come in and help with our work that. But that gives us a lot of access for people. So that's been very good. And then patient advocates, slide 11 or 10. When I came to Pine, they already had a patient advocate that helped patients with all the things you see here, Medicaid apps, My Child, medications, free medications, help at home, rides for appointments. And we expanded her role. Inez and I, every free thing we came across, we gave to her. She really was a prepay for uninsured for surgery, but we sent her over to the hospital. We had her learn the charity care process over there, which I had done at the hospital. That was part of what I managed. So we decided to go with the sliding fee scale because that would help for recruiting with our physicians because we could get loan repayment for them through NHSC and our doctors, you know, part of their mission is to take care of those folks. So it was just a win-win all the way around, and she's just been wonderful for people. It also takes some of the form work off our nurses and our doctors, and it's been a good thing. And as we move into this next thing, Medicare Transformation Project, she's going to be a vital part of that. And do you have anything to add about that, Inez?
No.
Okay. Financial benefits. So as you realize now, we're in two medical homes, Priority Health and the Blues. We do have to, Am I missing a slide? Oh, I'm sorry, I went right by 12. I apologize. Well, Senate, we put this registry in. It is not interfaced with our EMR. It's going to be soon, thank goodness. This really helps because it downloads to the HMOs. And it's been a very good thing. It's been a lot of work, but it's put everything in one place. We've got our MAMs in there, our screening colons, but all our chronic diseases. And we've got those labs interfacing. And then the eScribe SureScripts is in our EMR. That's automatic, as you know. I'm sure many of you have that. Have a different kind that have that in there. Do you want to mention anything about this, Inez?
I think the key for this is that we look at the schedules, patient schedules, the day ahead of time, and see who's coming in for an appointment, and we can run the summary sheet off of the registry and find the gaps of care, so when that patient comes in the door, the nurse and the physician know what areas they might want to focus on for that patient, whether they need some lab work done or they need a test done, or maybe they had it done and it's just not in well center yet. That happens too. But at least we can have a clue so that when we have that patient in the door, that we are doing what we're supposed to be doing for them or what's suggested that we do for them. And that has really helped our reporting. I can't even tell you how much, because it identifies all these different areas that maybe weren't done on the previous visit or that year yet.
We were very happy because this last year I think we had 2 quality awards, one from Health Plan in Michigan, one from Priority Health, and one from the Blues. But we also got nationally recognized by the Primary Care Consortium and had an article written about our diabetic program. So that was a happy thing. But understand that these care managers that take care of those chronics, two of those people already worked here. They were already employees. We have added 2 more. One has not started yet. But we're going to increase our care management because in Michigan, we're one of 8 states that now has this Medicare transformation project, and that is going to be a huge care manager type of situation where we're going to manage all the chronic diseases. So it's going to be very, very busy, and we're planning that right now. And then the financial benefits, slide 13. Like I said, we're in those medical homes. We did receive a 10% uptick or uplift of all UNUM codes with the Blues, which we continue to get. We got an increase of $3 per member per month with Priority Health because we were in CQA level 3. Now that has ended. And then there were T codes. Now T codes, care managers can bill, and these are codes that you bill when you're doing a care manager visit. Some companies, Priority Health or the Blues or certain contracts, will pay for that done on the phone also. So the financial incentives of all those ended up to be about $265,000 a year, although that's decreased a bit. And here's that grant. It was $145,000 that we were able to get. The quality payments, because of our high quality, and a lot of that because we've done the medical home, we probably have quadrupled that in the last 4 years. And I'd say each of the physicians, I guess, nets out about $35,000 each. It's quite a bit of money that comes to us from that. Now, this Medicare demonstration project, that starts January 12th, and it will pay all the the Blue Cross Blue Shield Blue Care Network, straight Medicaid, Medicaid HMOs also, and straight Medicare, not the Medicare Advantage plans. They are going to be paying per member per month to us for care management. And that's why we've beefed up our management a little bit, our care management.
And is that, for Medicare, is that in addition to your all-inclusive rate?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. And, excuse me, we will have, there are 4 tiers that they want us to do, navigating the medical neighborhood, and that's why this patient advocate is going to be so very important. We're going to be coordinating all these referrals and tests. We already have them in an order module. When they come back, we can match them to the order so we know where everything is going. We have to link to all community services. So if there's anything out there that someone needs, we can usually match that patient up. And now we've got somebody doing that a little bit part-time in the way, but we only have 4 doctors over in that site. The next are Tier 1 services, transition of care, which will be patients that are going to other specialists, perhaps to home care, perhaps to LTAC or something. We will have to follow them and keep track of them. Then the care management, the planned visits we talked about, self-management support, patient ed, even advanced directives, and then complex care management, which will be palliative care and hospice, that type of thing. And then they tell you you've got to have that patient access, just like we've had with our medical homes. And we had to be a medical home by June of 2010 to be eligible for this program. So we did make it in, and we're signing contracts right now for this to start in January. Do you have anything you want to add on this?
No, I don't. Fine.
Okay. So I think that that's about wraps it up. And Bill?
Okay. Yeah, I'm here. Operator, if you would give the instructions for the questions, and I have a few while we're waiting for people to get into the queue.
Okay.
Certainly, sir. Thank you. To ask a question, ladies and gentlemen, please press *1, then record your first and last name when prompted, along with your state location. Once the recording plays into the conference, your line is open and you may proceed with your question. If you're using a speakerphone today, please unmute your phone to allow your voice to be recorded. Again, we do ask that you record your first and last name along with your state location. Again, press *1 now if you'd like to ask a question. We'll pause for a moment to assemble the queue.
While we're waiting, either Marge or Inez, is it your sense that the size of your group, you're a little bit bigger, I think, than the typical rural health clinic, or certainly some of you're on the larger side.
Right.
Do you think that that was a factor in your ability to achieve PCMH status, or do you think that even a small rural health clinic with a doc and a PA or doc and a nurse practitioner could achieve PCMH status?
I think you can achieve it, but you have to build relationships with the community. You know, have a real strong relationship with the different specialists in the area and resources from the hospital would use some of that, but because we're multi-specialty and so on, we had some of that in place already.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it can be done. I just think that they have to really have strong relationships with the resources in the community.
And, you know, something, Bill, that helped us, our doctors do their own inpatient work, and that's a huge thing because we know where those patients are. You know, we don't have hospitalists here, or at least don't use the ones that have come.
Right. The when you started down this path, how much were you driven by financial considerations or improving the process and quality of care, both one more than the other? Do you have a sense of what was the significant driving factors?
I think that Marge and I work together really well. She knows the financial side because that's been her business. I know the clinical side, and I spent many, many years in long-term care where I really understand the process, you know, patient care process. And between the two of us, I understand the financial side. I mean, I know numbers a little bit. But I think it took both sides to do this.
Okay.
I agree. And Bill, I was a VP in finance at a hospital, so but always on the revenue side for physicians. That was my forte, and you know, the charge master and coding and all those things. So Inez and I, it was a match made in heaven. I mean, really, we just clicked, and we just said we're going to do this. And
we could see when we saw the requirements of the program, how it could improve patient care. And for me, that was the selling point. So.
Okay.
And I could tell you that was the drive. For me, of course, it's always going to be financial, especially when the banks are failing.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is, boy, I just think patients deserve the best, and especially like with that patient advocate position, you know, we really are doing a full circle around that patient, and I love that.
Okay. Operator, do we have questions?
We do have questions. We'll go to our first caller.
Go ahead,
Gloria
caller.
Fuina Dara.
Okay. And where are you from?
Hi, this Yeah, Gloria, Greenville Family Health Care in Greenville, New York.
Great. Hey, Gloria.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good.
This is great. I was wondering, is it a problem when you talk about community, are there problems with operating with a hospital outside the community?
We have in our system, in our EMR system, a factability program that when we contact, we have, first of all, employees that are designated to do referrals because our practice is kind of on the big side. And all these referrals to specialists outside of our small community have to be done, you know, every day. And we have a program built into our EMR where we can fax our medical records or parts of the medical records that they need. And we even now have forms that are standardized in our nearby big hospitals that we use the same forms to send to all of them. So they're very easy to fill out. And so we've had to change some things, you know, related to that. But that's how you do it. You just keep communicating with them.
Very good. Could you also tell me what's the average salary range for care managers?
You know, we pay between probably $17 and $20 an hour. So, but we're very rural. We're about an hour from the big health systems, and a lot of people that honestly, the last two gals moved back to Fremont and didn't want to work at the hospital, we were very fortunate to get them. And I know that's not a huge salary for an RN, but that seems to have been okay.
But they're all mainly RNs.
Just the care managers, but LPNs are eligible. They have what they call moderate care management, and LPNs are billable for those insurance companies and also in the transformation project with Medicare.
I see. I'm a PA, and I own my practice. Can these facilities be owned by a PA, or must they be by a doctor?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I wish I did. I do not know the answer. I think, you know, we went under criteria for these insurance companies, what they had in mind, so I just don't know, because that wasn't a question that we had to ask. And so
there used to be a requirement under the NCQA process for that a patient had to be under the care of a physician, but that was changed this past year so that they now will recognize PAs and NPs as the primary provider of care.
Wonderful.
So that I don't know that the ownership issue is the question so much as it is who's the primary provider of care for the patient, and they will now recognize both PAs and NPs.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay. Next question, operator.
Certainly. We'll go to our next question from
Doris McFarlane.
Go ahead, Doris. Where are you from?
I'm from Hillsboro, Illinois, small rural health clinic in the country. But I missed the website for the slides, and that's really what I'm asking for.
Oh, it's just www.primemed.com.
Well, that's for you.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about this program.
Right.
Yeah, you can go to the Office of Rural Health Policy website and download the slides. It's hrsa.gov/rural-health/policy/confcall/index.html. And if that still doesn't work, just send an email to info@narhc.org, and I will get you the slides.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Next question.
Next question will come from
Paula Arrett, Washington State.
Go ahead, Paula.
Actually, I have two questions. First, it was stated that this was being recorded. Where will we get access to the recording?
It's at that. It'll be on that same website. We have to wait until the transcript has been edited and available before we can post the recording. Generally, it should be 10 days to 2 weeks available for the recording, and the slides are all at that same site.
Okay. And at the beginning, you stated that it took approximately 1 year from the time you took the test to be certified. Did you have dedicated full-time staff to this process? I'm making the assumption that the two of you had other responsibilities and were not just working on this certification.
Well, we did have other responsibilities, but we were the ones that worked on the certification. Yeah, we did it.
We did it along with our regular jobs.
Okay. How much time do you think you spent on this? 40% of your time, 50?
No, you know, we had a standing meeting every Tuesday, and we just planned every Tuesday afternoon that's what we were going to do. So maybe
30%. At least on the clinical.
Yeah, on the clinical side. And I think for me it was, I'd say, about 20%.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Paula. Next question.
And that question will come from?
Carol Brinkert.
Hey, Carol.
Hi. I'm from Iowa. My question is regarding your I'm very interested in your diabetes ed program, and who is the hospital you collaborate with?
Well, it was Gerber Memorial, but it is now Spectrum Health Gerber Memorial, so it's been bought out by a big hospital down in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're an hour north of there, but I'll tell you, that diabetic program, I used to be a revenue person at a hospital, and I actually ran a small campus for a hospital, and I wanted that diabetic education piece because the educator kept telling me I never have any patients. And I went to the hospital, and luckily the CNO was very nice about it. And I said to her, I really can fill your program. You just got to bring me an educator. And but I did explain to them, and I knew this because I'd been in finance at a hospital, that on the hospital side, their educator can bill a G code and be paid. And they were unaware of that up here. And so when they looked into it, they found out, yes, indeed, they could be paid, and they were willing then to go ahead and start the program.
And Marge, how big is Gerber? How
many beds? It was 81 beds. I think they've downsized. It's about 63 beds, I believe.
Okay.
So the billing is done through the hospital side, and the delivery is done in the clinic.
Well, they bill their G code in their system. They pay us a little bit of rent for the room, and then we bill our care management side in our system. So they're actually billing a UB hospital, and we're billing a Part A UB for care management, you know,
okay,
in this program. But yeah, that's
okay,
how that
and
works.
You mentioned there was an article written about the program.
Yeah, it was in that Primary Care Collaborative. I've got it here someplace. It's a wonderful article.
If you want to, if you'll send me that article, we will send it out to the folks on the listserv.
Okay, I will do that.
So anybody who's on the listserv, if we get it from Marge, you will get it through the Rural Health Clinic Technical Assistance listserv.
Okay.
Great, I will do that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next question, operator. And how many do we have in the queue yet?
There's still 5 in queue.
Okay. We'll try and get to as many as we can.
And we'll go next to
Jennifer Jones with Harmony Health Medical Clinic in California, Yuba County.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi. I just wanted to find out if Pine Medical Group was for-profit or for a non-profit.
It's for-profit, but we still have the sliding fee scale, yeah. We are for-profit.
Okay, so you don't have a board, you just have the director?
Oh, no, we have a board. All our doctors are shareholders on that board.
Okay, okay. And I have one other question.
Not a traditional board, no.
Okay, that answers that. And then do you have to be a community clinic?
I'm not familiar with that term. What do you mean by a community clinic?
You mean we didn't have – we were a rural health clinic, or we could have been a private office that wasn't in a rural community. Are you talking about like a FQHC?
Correct.
Okay.
You are a RHC, correct?
We are an RHC. I have friends that, you know, FQHCs also qualify.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next question.
I will go to our next question.
Julie Amen.
Go ahead. I could barely hear that, but go ahead, next caller. Question.
This is Julie from Southern Illinois.
Hi, Julie.
I understand with a patient-centered medical home, part of the requirement is to have available 24-hour access to care. And would you mind speaking to how you manage that or share that in your medical practice?
Sure. Our office is open from about 8 a.m. until the last person is seen in the evening. We have one doctor who stays. And believe it or not, our doctors take call all night long themselves directly. So we could easily meet that domain. So they are on call and answer their phones whenever anybody calls.
I think that's a great question, Julie, because it's been one of the things that I think folks have kind of looked at with a kind of a scratching of their head. So it being available does not necessarily mean the doors are open, that having providers who are on call and available by phone can meet that criteria.
That's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you had an answering service, certainly, and they could get through to the doctor, that qualifies.
That help, Julie?
Yes, it does. How are those calls forwarded to the doctor? Do you just simply use a call forwarding mechanism, or the hospital refers?
No, they call into a number at Pine that automatically goes to the physician's cell phone in the evening. Now, that's not for our surgeons. That's only for our SPs, but it automatically goes to their cell phones.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Next question.
And the question will come from?
Chris Dalis.
Chris.
Northern California, rural health clinic based on a cough.
Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi. I just have a quick question. I kind of said part of it. We are a rural health clinic, hospital-owned, provider-based on the campus of a cough. We are getting ready to open a second rural health clinic about 25 miles north. My question is, because we are a nonprofit, we are part of Catholic Healthcare West, would we still be eligible to look at a patient-centered home?
Yes, I don't see any reason why not. We have our hospital next door to us owns four offices. Two they've converted into RHCs, and they've asked us if we would help them become medical homes.
Oh, great. That's what I needed to hear.
Okay. Well, that's in Michigan, so I hope that works for you.
Yeah, I'll check it in California because I'm sure it'll land in my lap if we go forward. But I think it's something that would really benefit our community. We're very, very low income up here.
Oh, well, we are too, and we think it's been great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next question. Thanks, Chris. Next question.
And the next question will come from?
Barbara Lay, location West Virginia.
Go ahead, Barbara.
Hi. I just wanted to check. You referenced being a National Health Service Corps loan repayment site, and
yes.
I just wondered if you were in a HPSA or how you obtained that status.
We're in a HPSA.
Okay.
And we put in the sliding fee scale because we wanted to and realized that gave us the benefit of getting in the NHSC for the loan repayment for DACs. So it was a win-win all the way around.
Thank you.
And just so you know, that as a rural health clinic, you're eligible, even if you're in a medically underserved area or a state-designated area, you can be designated as a facility designation for purposes of National Health Service Corps simply by virtue of being a rural health clinic and establishing a sliding fee scale. So all rural health clinics have the ability to be a site for the National Health Service Corps. They don't have to be located in a HPSA in order to be able to do that.
Great. Thank you, Bill.
Sure. Do we have any more questions, operator?
We did have one final question, and we'll go to that caller. If you could please
right.
just state
one, and then we'll wrap it up.
If the caller could just state their name and state location, please.
Kim Shemka, Michigan.
Go ahead, Kim.
I just was wondering, in the beginning they mentioned about surveys and templates. How did they go about creating those templates? Is that for EMR?
Well, we made our own
template.
We looked at what we needed to have, you know, what the goals were for the disease, and we went ahead and made those templates ourselves. And when we did this ordering thing, we found out in our office we had 102 forms that people were sending out to order testing, and we got that down to about 11, but we made up a generic and just kind of demanded people use it. So it was a good learning experience for us.
And did you do that yourself between the two of you, or did you have someone at the office? Was that another person involved in doing that?
We can make forms in our EMR, and we do have a nurse that's very good at doing it, a lot better than I am. So we do work, you know, that angle.
And then we had our admin go ahead, the administrative assistant that works for the entire group.
Mm-hmm.
Besides website, we sent her to class, and she learned how to do all those things so we didn't have to hire it out every time. So that was helpful for one person to have some marketing knowledge, the website, and some form control.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have to go to our EMR every time, too, and pay them the big bucks. We were
yeah, and so she's able to update those forms or edit them as needed.
Pretty much. It depends on if it's a barcode situation, then sometimes we have to have the EMR people do it. But pretty much we've been able to avoid a lot of cost.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. And that'll conclude our call today. And I want to thank both Marge and Inez for the time. This has been very helpful. I think the variety of questions and the diversity and the geographic from the East Coast to the West Coast, from New York to California and places in between. So I want to thank all of our participants today for participating. As I mentioned earlier, a transcript for today's presentation will be available at the ORHP website in approximately 10 days to 2 weeks. I also want to remind you to encourage others who may be interested to register for this series. Please share your thoughts and suggestions for future call topics by sending it to info@narhc.org and put RHCTA topic in the email subject line. And finally, I wanted to remind everyone that the next call is tentatively scheduled for January, perhaps February, depending on speaker availability, and a notice will be sent via email to everyone who is part of the RHCTA TA series. With details on that. Again, thanks everyone for participating. We look forward to talking to you in a couple months. Have a wonderful holiday season and a happy new year, safe and a happy new year to everyone, and we'll talk with you sometime in early 2012. Take care.
And again, that does conclude today's conference call. We'd like to thank you for your participation.